at one point, you're not going to be able to buy a Bitcoin or a 0.1 Bitcoin, right? Maybe even smaller, I don't know.
How much is enough?
Do you know how many Bitcoin there are available in the world? Only like 17, maybe 18 million, probably less. And do you know how many millionaires there are in the world? I worked at a bank. I can actually say I'm a former banker because I took the oath that they introduced after the great financial crisis. Bitcoin is either zero or it's the black hole of value. Like everything of value will be measured in Bitcoin. And then figure out how you can get as much of it before you cannot ever buy it anymore. Probably in 2040, when 99% of all Bitcoin are mined. And the last 1% is mined in the 107 years after, which is a rounding error. So you have years left.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Bram, also known as, well, I mean, he's got the podcast Bitcoin for Millennials, but Bram. You've come out and said Bitcoin is the most asymmetric bet, and you've allocated basically 100% of your portfolio to this with a 30-year time horizon. Most money managers would call you an absolute lunatic. So why are you so bullish on Bitcoin and seeing it as the end-all, be-all, and going all in?
Well, I think the sentence I say is Bitcoin is an asymmetric opportunity based on publicly available information, right? So, well, there's a lot to unpack there, but that's what I think, right? And I think where it starts is that, like you said, that, you know, my podcast is focused on millennials. I think you're a bit younger than me, but I think you have the same problem, maybe even worse than the millennials, is that once you realize that fiat money, the basement is basically a perpetual thing and also ever accelerating. Then how do you plan for your future? How can you make sure that you can actually retire or whatever that means for us in reality versus what we've been told as to like how your life goes, right? So you go to school, you get a job, and you know, you buy all these things, a house, etc., build a family, and then you retire, right? But if you're a mid-30s millennial and you still have to work for 30 years and you have either, you know, a 401k or a money manager that does something for you or an accountant, or you do it yourself, you know, you're planning on having X amount of money units by the time you retire, making sure you have a certain level of life that you want, right? That's all an individual preference. But how do you plan for the future if the value of each unit that you're planning on using in that future is being debased, like I said, at an accelerating rate, but also in the same way, in a very unpredictable way? Like there is no way to plan for this future. And I think the essence of that is to understand that it is not possible to plan for this future, because there is an infinite possibility to create more money units. So that's why people, of course, are putting a lot of money in real estate, right? Or long index funds and stuff like that. All the stuff that traditional financial advisors would tell you to do. But all these people are also educated in a system that is designed to perpetuate, you know, the I would say, involuntary kind of like unconscious participation in this entire system, right? So if you're told by someone who knows what money is that you should put your money in XYZ long index fund or government bonds that are risk-free, but in 2025 have a real negative rate of return, then yeah, you're not really going to make it into that future. That is my personal conclusion. So you have to start thinking for yourself. And I think before you even get to Bitcoin, you have to understand that you have this problem today. So whether or not you're interested in Bitcoin is not really relevant. The first step is understanding that it's getting increasingly hard to to plan for your future, but also realizing that your idea of this future with having a retirement and certain social benefits or whatever in your country is becoming more and more unlikely. So you need to do something today. I think that's one. Then two is, okay, what are all the things that you could do, right? And it's funny because before we started, you said, I worked at a bank. I can actually say I'm a former banker because I took the oath that they introduced after the great financial crisis. So everyone would promise that they would behave. Literally, it was that. It was literally me watching a video of the CEO saying, like, these are our guidelines. Do you agree? Yeah, I agree. Okay, now this was the banker oath, like literally nothing else. It's so crazy. But the thing is that even when I was 30 and I had a mortgage and I worked at a bank, I didn't even understand money. It took me a lunch with a colleague who told me, "Did you know that the money in the bank is not yours?" And me replying like, "Wow, what? Sorry, what are you talking about?" And then he explained fractional reserve banking to me and all that stuff. And it took me that interaction to realize there is something way bigger going on than thinking, oh, Bitcoin is this investment or I'm gonna get rich. And that really drove me into learning more about the financial and economical aspects of Bitcoin.
What if I told you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven.
But even more about the reason of existence of Bitcoin is what we started talking about, right? So if you live, or well, if you're forced to participate in a money system where each unit is being debased into perpetuity, and in essence, you are robbed of your time and energy, because that is basically what you're trying to save with the rewards from your labor in the abstracted form of what we call money, then yeah, what should you do? And so if you look at all these options, that's what I wanted to say. So although I've worked in finance, I don't have a finance background in that sense. And I think that helped me to eventually just end up with Bitcoin, because for me, it is just rational thinking. So I think there's two parts there. Like, you need to understand how Bitcoin works to a degree, and why you cannot just make more of it, one, and two, why the absolute cap is basically secured by the consensus of all the people that are participating in the Bitcoin network. I think those are essential, that you need to understand that. And then assuming that keeps on proliferating, right? As Jeff Booth says, as long as Bitcoin stays decentralized and secure, which means no one can change the ledger. So the integrity of the Bitcoin blockchain or time chain only goes up over time. I also call it, it's the highest form of ordered information ever to be created by people, right? When you audit the Bitcoin blockchain now and I do it, it's the exact same for us. There's no differentiation. It's wild. Like, that, there's an absolute truth that we share and that we can individually verify from across the world. And so when you understand that as long as Bitcoin stays decentralized and secure, the integrity will only grow, which makes the value only grow, because if the integrity grows, the predictability grows, the trust grows, etc. Okay, so in the protocol rules, it says there will never be more than 21 million Bitcoin. So there is this absolute finite supply, basically. So when you understand that exists, I think that's the main element you should use to compare it to all the other assets that you could use to store your wealth in, because in a fiat money, like we talked about now, like I mentioned, it's just not possible. And so what have people done up till now? They, you know, put it in real estate that you need to maintain. It becomes a liability. It's never, you know, it's conceptually it's yours, you know, there's a title deed and everything, but if you don't pay the property taxes, eventually someone with a gun will come to the door and say, like, you have to pay or we take this away from you. So it's never really your property. Stocks are definitely never your property, right? There's clearinghouses in between, you know, the stock apps that you use are just basically a database viewer of whatever is ascribed to your account. And so, you can go down the list of all the things that you could store your wealth in next to fiat money. You end up with gold and silver. Those are all traditional ways to do that. And they're not bad, but I think if you think rationally, you have to wake up to the fact that something came about that is superior to gold, silver, and all these other assets. So why is that? Bitcoin is really the truly, probably only thing you, or well, it's probably the only thing you can ever truly own besides your body or something. It's, you know, if you hold gold, I kill you. I have your gold. If I hold Bitcoin with a private key, you kill me. You don't get my Bitcoin. I can move my Bitcoin anywhere in the world, because it lives nowhere and everywhere at the same time. I can sell my Bitcoin. I can transfer my Bitcoin to anyone at any time, at any place in the world. You know, try doing that with real estate. Try doing that with prime real estate in Texas on the beach, right? Like, if you want to sell a prime real estate home in Texas on the beach, no one in New Zealand is going to buy that, right? But there's people in New Zealand that would want to buy my Bitcoin. Maybe those people want to buy your gold, but try shipping the gold to New Zealand, right? So if you just go down the list of characteristics of different types of assets that you can use to store your wealth, then in my opinion, rationally, you would end up with Bitcoin. But there's this back and forth, I think, also in the learning, right? Because then now I think people could ask, well, but why is Bitcoin a store of wealth, right? Like, aren't there, you know, 20 or 40 or 80, 100,000 other cryptos? And I think this is the right way, or a good way, to kind of go through the thinking, because you will go back and forth, right? Because when you realize, okay, there is apparently this digital asset where I can do all these things that I cannot do with traditional assets that, you know, I know, or other people have told me to know. Why is that? Why would computer code be something that can store value? And so that, I think, is the way that you can, like, rationally go back and forth to I ended up with the conclusion that I should be 90 to 100% in Bitcoin, because I think all the other assets are inferior. And that combined with the asymmetric opportunity coming from the fact that it's a new asset, which was born right when the current main system started to die, basically. And it's an asymmetric opportunity because no one really ever thought about what money is, or why it's broken, and why people are substituting the store of value function of what money should have with homes, how homes became like a tradable asset instead of a utility asset, right? So there's all these things that people have never thought about when it comes to money or the function of the money, or even entertain the idea that the money could be broken, that there are other people no better than us that then, that can just create infinite money and therefore dilute our personal time and energy. That sounds super, sounds like a crazy conspiracy, right? But it's true. And if you still think it's a conspiracy, well, then, you know, the Bitcoin meme is have fun staying poor. But that's not a meme to shame, right? Like, it's a meme to wake up, because you will be poor when you let all these other people keep on debasing the money that you earn for spending your finite time and energy into infinity. So if you want to keep on doing the dumbest trade ever to exist, then you can have fun staying poor. Like, you need to wake up to the fact that you're being bamboozled and that you were never aware of it and that you never thought about it, right? That you're probably your only idea of money came from when you were like 6, 7, or 8 and you were sent to a store with some coins and some bills and you were like, well, I need to get a bread or a milk, and you gave it to the person in the store and the person gave you the milk and you were like, well, okay, apparently this is money, and then you never thought about it again, right? And I think that is just hard. It's hard to see that, and it took me a long time. Like I said, I was working at a bank and I didn't even understand it. A lot of people working at the bank also don't understand it. But once you see it, that is the case, there's this bifurcation, right? There's a red or blue pill. It's like, okay, there are other people that control the value of the money that I'm forced to use. Am I okay with that or not? And that is, I think, the first decision you have to make before you could even get to possibly seeing Bitcoin as the solution that you can use to protect yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that was great. I mean, you went through it all. But I'm curious, you know, when you're working at a bank, right? I mean, you said you had one lunch with a colleague. Obviously, you fell down the rabbit hole at some point, you know, after that. What did it take for you to get from, okay, you know, maybe I'm going to dip my toe in 1-2% allocation to get to 100% allocation of just Bitcoin? Was it, you know, a certain amount of hours studying? Was it, you know, something that just clicked? Last bull run, we had exchanges blow up. You saw FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, you name it. But the true power of Bitcoin is getting it off an exchange into cold storage. This bull run, I'm trusting Trezor, the company that's been around for over a decade, and they just had a brand new release of the best hardware wallet in the game, the Trezor Safe 7. It's got the first audible secure element. No other hardware wallet has this. On top of it, I travel a lot, so I need an easy way to connect my Bitcoin hardware wallet to my laptop, phone, what have you. Therefore, it is the easiest way and has the best connectivity to access your Bitcoin. This is truly how you become your own bank, and the best way to do that is with a Trezor Safe 7. So you could go to the affiliate link down below and get yourself one right now, and do it quickly because they are flying off the shelves, folks. So do it with the easiest and best way to get your Bitcoin off exchanges. So go to the affiliate link down below, get yourself a Trezor Safe 7, and get your Bitcoin off exchanges in the easiest way possible. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. Like, why did you all of a sudden go from, okay, you know, I mean, because I feel like everybody kind of gets to that point, right? Like, all right, I'll put a little in Bitcoin. We'll see what it is. And then you kind of get down the rabbit hole and then you become the maxis like we all are. So what took you to that, you know, crossing the Rubicon there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I had that lunch, I was already into Bitcoin. Like, I walked into the HQ in the central business district of Amsterdam with a Bitcoin pin on my backpack, right? Always feeling like a little, you know, infiltrator. But until then, I really saw it as an investment, right? Oh, I'm going to get rich, whatever. But after that conversation, so I think there were a few kind of like pivotal points. It's hard to kind of tie them all together, but this was one. Like, the conversation was one. And I just remember walking away being like, okay, I'm an idiot. I'm into this. I work at a bank. I have a mortgage. Like, I'm doing all these things and I have no clue how this financial system works. So I realized that I wasn't the actor that I thought I was, but I was a subject in a system. And I just naturally got to that place where, like I just said, I thought, okay, am I okay with that or not? And so I don't know specifically what I did or studied, but I do know that at one point I just realized, okay, so I need to store my wealth, however much that is irrelevant, right? So you need to store your money, your pooled capital, until a point in the future where you want or maybe have to use it for XYZ use case, right? That is all dependent on your own wants, needs, desires, etc. But that is what you've been taught when you were younger, right? Saving is good, etc. But if you're saving in money units that are losing purchasing power over time, that's a bad decision. And that's why people feel like they need to put the money to work, right? They need to, but what people don't add to that is that's taking extra risk, right? So with a job or a venture, you're already taking risk by choosing to do that, right? Choosing to spend your time and energy on that. But when the reward you receive is being, it loses its purchasing power over time because it's being debased, you basically have a secret second job that you don't know you have. So when you're home from your job or your venture, you need to do stuff to mitigate the inevitable accelerating, mathematically assured debasement of the reward that you got today. So people have been taught, you know, put it, like I said, put it in these funds or put it in real estate or whatever, but they're not doing it in a conscious way, right? It's all part of this system of perpetual debt and nominal returns, but not about keeping your protecting your purchasing power over space and time in a way that is understandable and therefore at an acceptable conscious level of risk taking, if that makes sense, right? So when I realized that I was a subject in a system that I could never truly understand on one side, and I, you know, option A, and then I saw option B, which was Bitcoin, which, like I mentioned before, I can verify by myself at any time, anywhere, right? I can truly own it. I can send it to anyone without any intermediary. I can store it anywhere, etc. So when I just realized that if you look at your current wealth or whatever you have on your savings account, look at it just visually, it's just like one unit, a unit of your capital. Move that into a system that you could actually verify for yourself. And once I kind of like visualized or saw that, that's kind of when I went all in. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, hey, I'm with you on that. And I think once you kind of, I guess, hit that Rubicon, it's almost like freeing in a sense. But I think, you know, another question I got for you on this is when you said, you know, when you have enough, basically, based on however much, you know, you want for your lifestyle choices and everything like that, you know, what were some of the things that you, I guess, determined with as like how much is enough? Because I think, you know, when we reach this fixed supply asset, right, it's almost like, you know, Michael Saylor, too, when he said he first discovered Bitcoin, he was waking up in the middle of the night with cold sweats because he's like, somebody else is going to figure this out. And I'm not going to be able to get enough of it. When did you kind of come to that conclusion that, hey, maybe this amount is enough, or, you know, I don't need to keep stacking as heavily. You know, I can treat myself to a nice little steak or something like that. You know, when did you reach that point?
Well, I think I like the meme, stay humble, stack sets, right? But I think from Eric Stacks, he said, stay humble, stay solvent, stack sets, or something like that. And I think that's a great addition, right? Like holding Bitcoin is not just waiting and then wishing, just waiting, right? With anticipation. Oh, well, that by the way, was another clear point for me where I was like, okay, I need to be in Bitcoin, is when I saw a guy on Twitter say, well, if you think Bitcoin is not going to zero, you need a seat in the stadium. Because And it was funny because it resonated, because this is always how I always looked at Bitcoin. It's like Bitcoin is either zero or it's the black hole of value. Like everything of value will be measured in Bitcoin. I don't think there's a middle way ending for Bitcoin. So in that sense, Bitcoin is not without risk, obviously, but I'm taking a certain risk based on my current understanding, based on my actual own research and reflection and whatever, like everyone should do with whatever they hold their wealth in, right? The point is that in a fiat money system, you're just bamboozled without you knowing it, right? And therefore, there's other people that take advantage of that. So when I realized that it is, stay humble, stay solvent, stack sets, and when I got into the stadium, right, when I saw that tweet, and I was like, yeah, the tweet literally said, if you think it's not going to zero, you should get a seat in the stadium. There is no middle ending for Bitcoin. I was like, yeah, that's exactly how I think about it. That's when I realized, if I want to watch this unfold, I need to stay alive, basically, until I can see that happen, right? And like you said about Saylor, this whole idea of waking up with cold sweats and being like, oh shit, do I have enough Bitcoin? Or right, do you know the meme with the cat that says, no, I should have bought more Bitcoin? I mean, if you really think about it, and I've used this argument on 5 millionaires, right? There are 60 millionaires in the world. There's only 21 million Bitcoin, 3 million, 4 million are lost, right? So I just ask millionaires I come across, I say like, hey, do you have friends? Like I met a guy with a Porsche. I said, do you have friends with a Porsche? He's like, yeah. And then I say, okay, when you meet, you're going to be like, oh, nice Porsche. And they're going to be like, yeah, nice Porsche. And then I tell these guys, you have to say like, hey, do you have a Bitcoin? And then they say like, no, of course not. And then you should say, well, I have one Bitcoin. Do you know how many Bitcoin there are available in the world? Only like 17, maybe 18 million, probably less. And do you know how many millionaires there are in the world? And the first guy I told this looked at me and he was like, no. And I said, 60 million. And he was like, whoa, I need to buy Bitcoin, right? And I think once you grasp that, you know, sometimes you see these pictures of like all the gold in the world is like this cube on a football field. Bitcoin is, you know, physically, it is like infinitely small. That's how big it is compared to gold. If you want to like visualize it in the gold and Bitcoin way. But the crazy part is that, you know, on X or whatever, people replied to me like, oh yeah, my poop is also rare, right? But the point is, the point is that a lot of things that are rare and scarce are not absolutely scarce. They're not absolutely finite. This is computer code and an incentive structure that actually is created to enforce a monetary protocol in a decentralized and digital way. So even though your poop might be scarce too, no one wants to store their wealth in your poop, and your poop decays and whatever. Just like a home can also decay, right? And whiskey or sneakers even or whatever. So the point is that once you see that scarcity and also understand that it's absolutely finite, right? Absolutely scarce, which is the only thing ever in the world that is absolutely scarce that can also function as a global decentralized neutral money with final settlement. And then you understand that conceptually gold is scarce, but it's absolutely infinite in the infiniteness of the universe. Then you see, or could see, that Bitcoin is miles ahead, light years ahead of gold, on only this one characteristic being the scarcity, right? Because the main argument of people that say, well, gold has value because it's scarce, right? Okay, that's fine. Follow that reasoning. Anyone who's into gold, just follow that reasoning. Okay, there is a thing in the world that is absolutely finite that can function as a money, that can function as a money better than gold, okay? So, you know, you can dive into the gold versus Bitcoin thing for another hour. But to go back to the question you asked is, at one point, you're not going to be able to buy a Bitcoin or a 0.1 Bitcoin, right? Maybe even smaller, I don't know. Because like in history, people will figure out that the money is broken. A lot of people unknowingly, well, or like unconsciously kind of know because they put it in real estate and stuff like that. But at one point it will be so bad that they will flock to the best money, like this has happened in history before. And we are so early because this new form of money is something that's digital. So in the minds of a lot of people, it can also be created infinitely, right? Like if I have a photo on my computer, I can copy and paste it an infinite amount of times, and I can just put it on my computer and then put it on another computer. But there are these technologies that are working together in Bitcoin that actually create a bridge between the use of physical energy in the physical world to the creation of something digital in the digital realm in cyberspace. But that thing is basically a one of one. So your part of a Bitcoin is unique and different than my part of a Bitcoin, if that makes sense. And so, you know, you have 21 million full Bitcoins, but they're all divisible by 100 million parts, which is the actual integral unit of a Bitcoin. So once you understand that there is that amount of units, but there's a fence around it that says, you know, you cannot make more of it. If you want to, you have to create the strongest computer network in the world. Okay, what does that mean? What does that mean when there is something that is absolutely finite? It's either stupid, right? It goes to zero. Or it's the most amazing technological advancement that we've ever seen. And we could talk about what the result is of an absolute finite money, you know, and what that could bring. But at one point, you know, I think if you realize I need Bitcoin, I think you also realize that there is now a window. I think until 2033-ish, where the price is somewhat attainable. You know, if you use the those 60 million millionaires today, they all of them cannot own a Bitcoin.
This bull run, I'm looking for ways to stack Bitcoin in my sleep, and mining has always caught my eye. I've partnered with the guys over at Simple Mining to help you do just that. I don't recommend anything that I don't use personally, so I've got a machine up and running with them right this second. And they've even opened the facility up so anyone can go and visit. They manage over 15,000 machines for 500 clients, handling all of the maintenance and repairs so you don't have to. And for the Green Candle listeners, they're giving an exclusive offer: all the repairs for the first year for free. So if you've been thinking about mining, head on over to simplemining.io/greencandle to get this exclusive offer and learn about the potential tax benefits that you can get from mining with Simple Mining. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
33% of them cannot even own, or 66% of them cannot even own one Bitcoin. So let's say, what is the price now? 92, 93K, right? Let's say you're a cash millionaire, 1 million. Are you going to put about 10% of your wealth into this magic internet coin? Or exchange 100, 10% of one form of money into another form of money. That's kind of how I see the price. It's not a price, it's an exchange rate. Are you going to do that? I think that's a hard decision. So even the people that are at that level of wealth cannot all get one Bitcoin. Percentage-wise, from all their wealth, it's quite a difficult decision whether or not to buy, one Bitcoin. So they also have to put in the work, but they're also programmed in a way like we were all programmed about money, right? So that is where this asymmetric opportunity comes from. Like, you don't have to be a millionaire or a multimillionaire to get into Bitcoin. You have to figure it out with your mind what this means. And that is where the asymmetric opportunity comes from, based on the publicly available information. All this information is free. We are talking here for free. I learned everything about Bitcoin for free. Okay. And so that is just what it is. So the summary for me is, you have a huge problem today. There is no pension for you. There are no social benefits for you. The money is mathematically assured to the base forever at an accelerating rate. So how do you plan for your future? Okay, you need to substitute the store of value function first of your money into another money or an asset. Check all the assets that you could use. Understand the characteristics and why they are important. Then put Bitcoin next to it. Understand what absolute digital scarcity means and the profoundness of it. And then figure out how you can get as much of it before you cannot ever buy it anymore. Probably in 2033, when 99% of all Bitcoin are mined and the last 1% is mined in the 107 years after, which is a rounding error. So you have 8 years left.
I love it. Another stat that I like to throw out, because I use the 60 million millionaires stat all the time as well, is that if you look at, like, I think it's BitInfo charts, I like to pull that up, but they've got all the distributions of the wallets. Right now, there's 49 million wallets that have $1 or more worth of Bitcoin right now. So that means that it's more rare to own $1 of Bitcoin in cold storage than it is to be a millionaire, which I think is just absolutely insane when you break it all down. But I mean, you lined out some of the things that a few people like misunderstand about this bet. But I'm curious, because obviously, you know, all the information is, you know, free and publicly available. But what is something that, all of these people that aren't in Bitcoin, what is the biggest thing that you think they misunderstand? And what is it going to take for them to, I guess, get over and kind of take that orange pill and join us here on the orange side?
Well, it's funny because you say bet, right? I don't think Bitcoin is a bet, an investment, or a trade, right? A lot of people would say, well, it's a speculative thing, dude. Like, it's a speculative thing. It's digital. Like, what if the EMP comes, or what if the sun blows up? Like, what if all the countries in the world coordinate to turn off the electricity or turn off the internet, right? Like, a lot of people are at what I call end of the road counter arguments to Bitcoin. Like it, almost improbable scenarios that they're using as their anti argument. But I think one that I want to highlight is it's a speculative thing. I always say, dude, everything is speculative. Waking up in the morning is speculative because you might die. Okay. And if you invest in Tesla, you speculate on the fact that Elon wakes up in the morning, right? What happens to Tesla when Elon is dead in the morning, right? Same for Steve Jobs with Apple and all that stuff. So everything in life is speculation. All the choices you make are speculating on a certain outcome that you hopefully are making looking at in a conscious way before you make the decision. So, you know, stuff like that is just nonsense in my opinion. I think what I just talked about is an objective and rational approach to the factual problem that everyone has, except the people that control us and that are in charge of the money, which is a way smaller group than us. When you look at it like that, you cannot deny you have a problem. And that is why this is such a hard thing to grok, just the understanding and the acceptance, I would say, even the integration of the fact that you have been bamboozled. Even at 30, even at 50, even at 70, when, you know, I saw this video of a guy who retired in California and he bought a house 40 years ago when he was 30, and he still lives there. Now he's retired at 70. He has to work to pay property taxes. And if he doesn't pay the property taxes, right, he gets evicted because the man with the gun comes and says, you know, this house isn't really yours. That stuff is happening. Dude, in Lebanon, people rob banks, not to get other people's money, but to get their own money.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, it's like when I come across these things that are factually true, and I realize, well, someone in Lebanon or Venezuela or Zimbabwe, where there's hyperinflation, Argentina, they all have the same money system. We are just, I'm lucky that I live in Europe, you know, like number two of the world. You're lucky to live in the US, number one of the world, you know, but they're all going in the same direction. Not like just Zimbabwe or Argentina a few decades ago, but also like many empires before us hundreds of years ago, right? Like this is nothing new. It's nothing new. So I think the first point is just accepting you have this problem. You are being bamboozled. Yeah, that's messed up. I know, really messed up. Okay, what does that mean? No one is coming to save you. You have to figure this out. You really have to figure this out, or else this whole system where a small group of people know better than you will still control you will just perpetuate, right? And like I said, when I visualized this idea that I could move from a fiat money system to a Bitcoin system and really grokked what that meant, they can come after me, they can pull guns and whatever. I can still have my Bitcoin. And people will think that's crazy, but I came to the conclusion that's basically the level where we're in. That is the level of the battle or the war or however you want to call it. I think that we're in. And so why would you go into Bitcoin? Well, it's not only to preserve your own time and energy, but when you have children, what does your children's future look like?
Why would you ever hold generational wealth on a piece of paper? It doesn't make sense. You need a foolproof solution, and I've got it for you. You could get this as low as $25, and if you use promo code GreenCandle, you could get 10% off. Being around for 12 years, they've engineered the perfect and most easy to use solution. I've partnered with CryptoSteel to offer for you guys just that. It is the cheapest and most secure way to store your seed phrase. I don't know about you guys, but I don't have too many things where I think one ton is going to fall on this, but it could survive all of that and more. So go to CryptoSteel.com. You can use promo code GreenCandle. You can get 10% off your entire order if you go there today. So go ahead and protect your generational wealth and do it with CryptoSteel. All right, enough from me. Back to the show.
In a world where the money is useless, like you see, like, you know, even the pictures from Venezuela where the money is on the street, people use it, you know, really light it up for fire. That system is no different than us, and that is it is coming, I think. So what can you do about it? And I think the crazy realization that I had is that Bitcoin is a way to do that. It's wild. I didn't expect that up front. Like I said, I thought it was an investment. Oh, I'm going to get rich. I'm going to trade this or whatever. Until I realized it's a new form of money that can actually protect me from the, you know, predatory abuse and theft of my time and energy by other people that I don't know, that don't know me. So why would I accept that, right? So I think this is a huge battle and it's going to take a very long time. And so I hope I will see interesting things in my life, but I think Bitcoin is more for the kids. What does their future look like when the money is useless? When some of these technocratic people are going to be like, well, you should have a CBDC and scan your face or your hand, or, you know, like, okay. Yeah. Is that what you want to give to your kids? I don't want to do that. So I'm trying something first for myself and for my kids. And then, you know, just trying to tell other people about what I've discovered. If they buy Bitcoin or not, I don't really care, to be honest.
Yeah. And you're describing like a structural shift, it seems, right? Like it kind of expanding your time horizon. And if this is the case, right? I mean, which I think a lot of us listening here seem to believe or are coming to that conclusion. A lot of the financial advisors, even though there's the ETFs, They're still building a lot of, I guess, like, you know, financial based tools on top of Bitcoin and not really just going straight into Bitcoin to the asset. So, you know, why do you think the professional class hasn't really figured this out yet, especially, you know, with your former banking experience, right? I mean, as a former finance bro, why do you think the other ones hadn't figured it out yet?
Well, I was never really a finance bro, but
I'm kidding. You can't.
I think it's because it's
that, man.
No, no, of course. You should make it YouTube titles like former banker. No. Oh no. I think it's a great question. It also seems like a very simplistic question, I would say, but I'm only saying that because I can look back, right? Because like I just said, I just think this is a very logical and rational conclusion. I think every other way that I could store my time and energy store my wealth over time and space is inferior, right? So when someone says, when are you going to sell Bitcoin? I say, well, sell for what? Like everything is inferior to this asset. And I think people are kind of distracted when, you know, when I say something like this, people are going to be like, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's what I would say because you have Bitcoin. You know, that's all fine. You have to think for yourself. And I think that's the hard loop, because you have to get to a point where you realize that quite a big amount of your time, you haven't really fought for yourself. You're just following certain structures that are there, certain things that people do because, well, other people do them, right? And I think that is why it is just hard to see. The fact that you can voluntarily come up, like, could you voluntarily come up with the random thought of, is there a centralized group of people that are debasing the money I'm forced to use in this country I was randomly born in to siphon away my time and energy that I give away in a finite way, right? Once you spend it, it's gone. And yeah, how do I feel about that? You know, no one is randomly sitting on their couch and being like, wow, this is a fun thing I'm gonna think about. So I think it feels like a very distant thing. Like, no, that could never be, right? Inflation is a natural phenomenon, right? It's a beast that came from nowhere, like Christine Lagarde of the ECB says, right? It's all nonsense. It's just not true. And you're being bamboozled again. Like, I think that is just a fact, but waking up to that is probably the hardest thing, because once you wake up to that, you have this red blue pill moment, right? And some people would take a blue pill, like the guy in the Matrix that betrays the group with Neo and says, well, I'm going to eat the steak. I know the steak is fake, but I love the steak. I'm just going to go back in the Matrix, although it's fake. I don't really care. Those people are also there. So that's fine. Those people are always there. So not Bitcoin is for everyone, but not for anyone, but not everyone will get it. And that's okay. You know, and I think it is probably harder when you are a finance bro, when you are into finance, because yeah, your entire education and your current working life and the way you provide for your family is all depending on the fact that you don't figure out that you're participating in what is basically a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems to be the case. And, you know, what I think is interesting too is that now they're starting to see, hey, they've been getting their butts whipped by all the Bitcoin guys out here who just essentially bought Bitcoin, put it in cold storage and forgot about it for years. So I think it is interesting that we're seeing this shift, but I honestly don't even think it's really here yet, just because of, you know, what I lined out with all of the wallets just having, you know, less than $1 of Bitcoin being less than the amount of millionaires. Of course, they're looking at ETFs and all these other things. But one thing that I think, you know, I really like the way that you put is your long time preference. Now, you know, I want you to dive in kind of that shift that you made for yourself, because I think the fiat mindset is more, hey, we need to make sure that this is, you know, looking good now, or, you know, the next day, or we need to make sure that the market's looking good by midtime this year because midterm elections are around. So, you know, how do we move that shift from essentially just these short burst cycles into more of like a longer time horizon? And will this eventually change where, you know, there won't be the coveted 4-year cycles of Bitcoin and it'll just be kind of, I guess, up and to the right in a sense?
Oh, big question. I think the 4-year cycle is dead in general. I think up until now, the halving did matter. I don't know if, you know, it would be hard, would have been hard for Satoshi to figure out, okay, it's going to take these X amount of years and, you know, like, let's say 12 years, 12 and a half, or well, like 14, 15 years for Bitcoin to actually, well, basically be adopted to a certain degree where everything we're talking about in this conversation becomes clear to more and more people, right? So the halving is just, it's basically just a technical thing that obviously had impact, but now I think the change of the block reward compared to the amount of wealth that is stored in Bitcoin is kind of moving apart from each other in a sense that the halving has less effect to the downside, I would say, and more effect to the, in a negative way, and more effect to the upside in a positive way, because if organically and logically more and more people figure out that, you know, the fiat money debasement is mathematically assured and they need to find a way to store their wealth, like we've been talking about for 45 minutes. Yeah. If you follow a rational approach, you end up with Bitcoin. Okay. So if more and more people end up with Bitcoin, but there's less and less Bitcoin available, then yeah, of course, with an absolute finite supply, the price goes up. And I think even in, let's say, 14 years, the Bitcoin has gone faster than other new technological innovations. So I'd say it's right on track. And in general, I'm not a price guy. I'm not a chart guy or whatever. So I don't really follow like liquidity cycles and stuff like that. But what I have seen is that currently, I think we have been in a very long kind of like consolidation, like bearish consolidation phase. And there's a lot of things that are happening this year that, especially in the US, could show the incentives for the current administration to actually adopt Bitcoin. And that has to do with, well, like you said, well, not the midterms, yeah, because that just happens. But why is Bitcoin important for the US? Well, they have a debt that they can never repay. And there are still people that are buying that debt because those people are still they're still enchanted by risk-free rate of government bonds. So there's still some fools that are still buying sovereign debt. But that is drying up, and there are different, well, there's a bit, you know, the BRICS bloc, China, etc. They are aware of this fact. And again, this is nothing new. Like in history, this has also happened many, many times before, right? So what is an opt-out for America? I learned this yesterday from Peter Dunworth. What is an opt-out for America that would be politically approved? And which would not result in infinite money printing to nominally pay back the debt. And infinite money printing would eventually result in extreme currency debasement, right? And affect just normal citizens and their homes and pensions and all that stuff. In the beginning of this year, I think they have to refinance, I don't know, you probably have that number, but a lot of trillions of the debt, right? So there's this clock that's ticking in that way, there's a political clock ticking. And so Peter Dunworth explained to me, well, if you would introduce bit bonds, right? So why does Bitcoin's value go up over time, I think is important to highlight. Well, if more and more people organically figure out they need a superior way to store their wealth, by the way, when you do it in Bitcoin, you also store it in a medium of exchange. But I think the medium of exchange function comes after people figuring out there's a store of value function, right? Because why would I want to receive a Bitcoin in a value exchange if I don't understand that I can actually save in it, right? So I think the saving comes before the medium of exchange. So if more and more people organically, and I think at an accelerating rate, like the money is being debased at an accelerating rate, figure out that the money is broken, they need a better asset to store their wealth. Bitcoin is something that governments cannot print more of, right? More and more people will find Bitcoin. But when you look at the HODL waves, right, like how long Bitcoin has been held, I think if you look at 2 years and longer, we're at like 58, maybe even above 60%. And all those people already understand what we're talking about in this conversation. So this also adds into the asymmetric opportunity for me, is that there are already not a lot, but enough people that already understand what this is. And they're not selling, right? Like sell for what? So if more and more people figure this out and there's less and less Bitcoin available, what happens to the price of Bitcoin, right? It goes up. It's very basic. So that will be my price prediction. So this is the direction I think we're going. And it's funny because I think over time, kind of my idea around this shifted, also connected to my attention to this. But I still think there's going to be an inflection point. There's going to be a game theoretical inflection point where the interest in Bitcoin or the need for Bitcoin, whether it's voluntarily or forced, right? If the US comes out with, oh, well, we have 600,000 Bitcoin, China also has to do something and Russia also has to do something. And you know, countries in the EU also have to do something. If Bitcoin is the new gold, they all have to do something, even when they hate Bitcoin or don't understand it. Right, so that's what I mean with there's an involuntary growth of the need for Bitcoin and an involuntary growth for the need of Bitcoin. Eventually this is still the same idea I've had years ago. There's going to be an inflection point, I think. There has to be, on an absolute finite asset, there has to be an inflection point where demand is way bigger than the supply, and basic economics says price, number go up, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, it's the simplest lesson in economics, right? Supply and demand when it really comes down to it. But you have this 30-year time horizon that you've talked about before. What would need to happen for that we sit here 30 years, we're having this same conversation. What would need to go wrong where all of us sitting here would be like, all right, what the hell happened? We were so sure about this Bitcoin thing, and now we're sitting here 30 years later and we were wrong. What do you think is something that, I guess, maybe you don't foresee, but would be something that would make you change your thesis?
I think it's more the complacency of people. So, you know, there's a classic Bitcoin meme that says Bitcoin is inevitable. And I used to say it a lot of the times because I thought, you know, all the other people in the world are rational and logical, and they will also figure this out, right? And that's why I'm waking up with sweats. That's why sailors waking up with sweats. But that's not the case. Like, a lot of people need, I don't want to say a push, but they need education, just like you and I needed education, right? And I think the idea of Bitcoin actually making your outlook on the future be more positive and bringing you hope is something that I think a lot of people that see Bitcoin also would wish for other people, but these other people are not going to figure it out at the same rate. So when you say like Bitcoin is inevitable, you know, it's just going to happen whether you like it or not, I think it's partially true, because the people that should understand, right, like the finance bros, eventually some will figure it out. But the biggest finance bro in the world has figured it out, right? Like Larry Fink has figured it out. So I think that's also something that creates a sense of urgency. But Bitcoin is not inevitable in the sense that when you are into Bitcoin and you just think, well, it's going to happen. I'm not going to contribute to it. Now, that's fine if you don't want to do it, but I do think it is necessary. Bitcoin is in that sense not inevitable, right? We need to educate our children. We need to educate our family. We need to educate our friends, not only on Bitcoin, but on the characteristics of what apparently, as I learned later in my life, is a better form of money. What does that mean? What are the characteristics of that, right? So I think that's very important also for the thing that happened to gold not to happen to Bitcoin, right? Gold was so good at money that it got replaced. So if you want to make sure that doesn't happen with Bitcoin, you shouldn't stop talking about Bitcoin. And that's at least what I'm trying to do. And every time I get a reply on like YouTube or Spotify that says like, oh, you really helped me to see it, I just post it on X and I say, don't stop talking about Bitcoin. Like, I think you shouldn't stop talking about Bitcoin. So what I think could go wrong is the complacency, just thinking like, oh yeah, it is going to happen. People are going to figure it out. Like I said, I had Tuur de Meester on, is like a Bitcoin OG. I had him on my podcast and he used the word war for the first time, right? And it's not a nice word to say or hear, you know. People have all these ideas with the word war, but I do agree, like I kind of touched upon before, this is a huge battle. Like, the battle for the technology of money in the world is probably the biggest technological battle that you could participate in. And it's not going to happen just because you figured it out and think other people will also figure it out. I really think you need to contribute to it if you really want to see that, see something change and see your, you know, visualize your kids in a better future than yours, which is the entire goal, which has been the entire goal for all of humanity, right? And I think you have to contribute to that. I feel called and invited to contribute to that. So that's what I'm trying. And I think that is probably the biggest threat, just people being complacent to that.
Yeah, man. And you're doing a great job. So I always love the contribution you're doing. And it's always a pleasure to see. I know I saw you on Amsterdam. I'm sure you'll be around at a lot of these conferences and meetups all around the world this year as well. But for those of you who don't know about Bram, where can they find you and listen to some of the great stuff you're putting out?
Yeah, so the podcast is called Bitcoin for Millennials. You can find that on Spotify, Apple, everywhere. You can find it on YouTube. You can search for Bitcoin Bram. Bram on YouTube, and I'm mainly active on X at Bramk, Bramk, and also on Noster. You can search for my username, and there's a profile there too.
There we go. I'll put that all in the show notes. So Bram, thanks so much, and yeah, man, keep it up.
Will do. You too.
Thank you guys all for tuning in to another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them, and I'll see you guys all at the next one.